This is Catherine Hastings, and you are listening to Word Temple on KRCB 91.1 FM. April is National Poetry Month, so as usual, we will be celebrating tonight by hosting a poetry party. You will hear many, many poets reading their work and some good music, too. The first part of the program is going to have a travel theme, and I don't want to interrupt after each poem read, so I'm going to give you the lineup right now for this segment. We're going to start out with Jack Kerouac, the great beat poet and writer, singing an original song, On the Road. Following Jack Kerouac, Kamau Braithwaite reads from the Rwanda poems. Lawrence Ferlinghetti reads number 4 from Coney Island of the Mind, In Paris in a Loud Dark Winter. And then Louise Bogan comes on with Italian Morning, followed by Margaret Atwood reading from an Italian Postcard Factory. And then Robert Creeley reads Cambridge Mass, 1944, followed by Donald Hall reading Mount Kearsarge. We're going to end this segment with Lawrence Ferlinghetti's The Statue of St. Francis. This is from the Kenneth Rexroth and Lawrence Ferlinghetti poetry reading CD in The Cellar. Let's move on right now. Here is Jack Kerouac singing On the Road.
You hear me now? But anyway, tonight also, I wrote a song called On the Road. I'm just reading what I wrote all night. There are better things coming than what I wrote all night. Coming straight from the mind to the voice, with no hand intervening. Left New York, 1949, to go across the country without a dead blame dime. Montana in the cocoa fall, found my father in a gambling hall. Father, father, where have you been? Been with the ruler since his only 10. Your son, he said, don't worry about me. I'm about to die of the blues. Across the Mississippi, across the Tennessee, across the Nile, briar, home I'll never be. Home in Omadora, home in Turkey, Apalachicola, home I'll never be. Better off, worse, thick and thin, like being married to the little woman. God loved me just like I loved him. I want you to do the same just for him. Worms eat away, but the worry what's will win. The worms eat away, but the worry what's will win. So I left Montana on an old freight train. The night my father died in the cold, cold rain. Road to Opelousas, road to Wounded Knee. Road to Ogallala, home I'll never be.
Shango, can't go no farther, can't go no farther. All winter wrong, he stored the songs you hear now in these mandolins. All through the cold, hard, dark, he labor for this light. And now he find it on him lip, he blow the flute, he string him lute, him rise and go again looking for his Oya of the afternoon. Him rose in pain, the pale flame of him sunset in the western tree. She sits now in the harmattan, surrendering to all this green, heedless of headlong papers, toddlers, lovers she cannot even quite ignore inside this park. But even now, if you look closer, beyond the book she's murmuring, beyond the cane fields of the hair she's still upbraiding in the mirror she is canvassing, beyond the language of the summer's clockwork warm and curl she's bearing to the water, you will already see the shadows, even by the lake side. even by the fountain, even by the footfall, even by the cart that sells snowball, ice cream, sky juice, and Coca-Cola, even within the broadcast service of the plane trees, even within the holocaust of hot hibiscus bushes, even within the deepest brocade russets of the dawn. Each year, upon this longest day, lover of leaf light, golden beyond the zodiac, emerald in Pisces, indigo in Platanegro, when he feels strongest, most certain, most lion, most lightning, most royal, most ashe, most Shango, when she's most loyal jasmine, most crest and silver shed, most mellow full moon rising, there will be this cloud, this sudden color downfall, cold and pouring. Each year, upon this longest day, these lovers mourning, mourning, mourning.
In a surrealist year of sandwich men and sunbathers, dead sunflowers and live telephones, housebroken politicos with party whips performed as usual in the rings of their sawdust circuses, where tumblers and human cannonballs fill the air like cries, when some cool clown pressed an inedible mushroom button and an inaudible Sunday bomb fell down, catching the president at his prayers on the 19th green. Oh, it was a spring of fir leaves and cobalt flowers, when Cadillacs fell through the trees like rain, drowning the meadows with madness, while out of every imitation cloud dropped myriad wingless crowds of nutless Nagasaki survivors, and lost teacups full of ash.
Italian morning. Half circles come before we know. Full in the falling arc, we hear our heel give earth a lonely blow. We place the hour and name the year. High in a room long since designed for our late to visit under night, we sleep. We wake to watch the lined wave take strange walls with counterfeit light. The big magnolia, like a hand, repeats our flesh, O bred to love, gathered to silence. In a land thus garnished, there is time enough to pace the rooms where painted swags of fruit and flower in pride depend, stayed as we are not. The hour wags deliberate, and great arches bend in long perspective past our eye. Mutable body and brief name confront against an early sky this marble earth and this stone flame.
From an Italian postcard factory. Why prowl the world, hungry and albino, with your face of a blotter, your eyes on stalks, jerking this way and that, rubbing yourself against these alien landscapes on the sniff for the real thing? You know you will never find it. The muted trees shaped like umbrellas or reversed turnips or brooms. The mountains that were promised you recede as you approach, taking their unassailable blue, leaving a space devoid of anything but the air in elevators. A clean toilet is a metaphysical assumption, your quest for which has spoiled the view. But you also want demons that are still believed in. We, on the other hand, can give you the genuine item without the pain. No gut cramps, no swollen ankles, no men thrusting their fingerless hands through taxi windows. We sell pure yodels, camel drivers with no buses in the background, tamed bangles, wrist to elbow on women who don't mind, the essence of wherever you like. And those mountains, those brief blue mountains, can be yours as much as they are anyone's, forever, untouched by anything but the clouds. Untouched, as you know, means untouched by you.
Cambridge, Mass, 1944. Sister remembers night she'd come down to meet me in town. My friends then told her I'd jumped in the river and hadn't returned. But once in the water, I'd kept on swimming across to far shore, where police fished me out and put me in jail, where I stayed the night, naked in cell, so clothes could dry out. Next morning, the judge gave me dime to get home.
I have one other poem from that scene, which is called, I think it's from that scene. It's called Mount Kearsarge. It's supposed to be from there. That's a mountain which is near the farm, and it's tremendously dominant. It's a god. My grandmother lives up there on the farm still, where she was born 91 years ago. And every morning she gets up and looks out, and she says, "Can't see the mountain too good today," or "Mountain's pretty today," or something like that. That's the ritual for the beginning of the day. Mount Kearsarge. Great blue mountain, ghost. I look at you from the porch of the farmhouse, where I watched you all summer as a boy. Steep sides, narrow, flat patch on top. You are clear to me, like the memory of one day. Blue, blue, the top of the mountain floats in haze. I will not rock on this porch when I am old. I turn my back on you, Kearsarge. I close my eyes, and you rise inside me, blue ghost. When I was about finishing that poem, I decided it probably wasn't about Kearsarge at all, but about a lady. It seemed to me to have that kind of feeling to it. You are clear to me like the memory of one day. I'm not sure what lady, but maybe all ladies. I don't know. And then later, when I was looking at it again, I saw that at the end of it, I'd done this thing. I remember writing it and fiddling with the line breaks and everything and not knowing what I was doing, as usual. But at the end, I had isolated, in the next to last line, those three long I's. My eyes, and you rise inside me. I love those diphthongs. Just love them. And then I noticed that before that, I put clothes at the end of the line. Then I'd end with ghost. So the end of the poem, to me, really, is not what its images are, but more something like, oh, I, ooh, oh. Sometime I'd like to make a whole poem like that.
This is the statue of St. Francis. It really happened. They were putting up the statue of St. Francis in front of the church of St. Francis in the city of San Francisco, in a little side street just off the avenue where no birds sang. And the sun was coming up on time in its usual fashion, and just beginning to shine on the statue of St. Francis where no birds sang. And a lot of old Italians were standing all around in the little side street just off the avenue, watching the wily workers who were hoisting up the statue with a chain and a crane and other implements. And a lot of young reporters in button-down clothes were taking down the words of one young priest who was propping up the statue with all his arguments. And all the while no bird sang any St. Francis Passion, and while the lookers kept looking up at St. Francis with his arms outstretched to the birds which weren't there, a very tall and very purely naked young virgin with very long and very straight straw hair and wearing only a very small bird's nest in a very existential place, kept passing through the crowd all the while, and up and down the steps in front of St. Francis, her eyes downcast all the while, and singing to herself.
This is Catherine Hastings. You just heard a number of poets, starting out with Jack Kerouac singing the song On the Road, followed by Kamau Braithwaite, Lawrence Ferlinghetti, Louise Bogan, Margaret Atwood, Robert Creeley, Donald Hall, and then once again, Lawrence Ferlinghetti. As we move closer to the centerpiece of tonight's program, readings from Donald Sidney Fryer's The Atlantis Fragments, here are some poems where water appears. I'm going to start out with a little music. This is Stephen Kimbrough and Dalton Baldwin performing Walt Whitman, Cycle 2, O Captain, My Captain. This is from Kurt Vile's This is the Life and Other Recorded Songs. Following that, Mark Strand will read Black Sea, Carolyn Forché, The Island, Ravi Shankar, Spangling the Sea, and we'll end with Czesla Miloš, A Song on the End of the World.
Yeah. My captain does not answer. His lips are pale and still. My father does not feel my arm. He has no pulse nor will. The ship is anchored safe and sound. It's voyage closed and done. From fearful trip, the victor ship comes in with object on. Exult, O shores, and ring, O bells, but I with mournful tread.
I am Mark Strand, and I am reading Black Sea from my forthcoming book, Man and Camel. One clear night, while the others slept, I climbed the stairs to the roof of the house, and under a sky strewn with stars I gazed at the sea, at the spread of it, the rolling crests of it raked by the wind, becoming like bits of lace tossed in the air. I stood in the long whispering night waiting for something, a sign, the approach of a distant light, and I imagined you coming closer, the dark waves of your hair mingling with the sea, and the dark became desire, and desire the arriving light. The nearness, the momentary warmth of you, as I stood on that lonely height, watching the slow swells of the sea break on the shore and turn briefly into glass and disappear. Why did I believe you would come out of nowhere? Why, with all that the world offers, would you come only because I was here?
Two summers ago, I went to Spain to translate the poetry of a Salvadorian exiled poet, Clarivel Alegría. Clarivel now lives on the island of Mallorca in a village called Deia. I wrote this poem to give my love back to Clarivel from what she had given me. She's 20 years older. She was born in Nicaragua. Her father fought with the Sandinistas. They went to Salvador. 14 years ago, she wrote a book. It was banned in Salvador. And because of her friends, her father's friends, she was able to get out of the country. This poem is called The Island. The island is Mallorca. The village is Deia. In Deia, when the mist rises out of the rocks, it comes so close to her hand she could tear it to pieces like bread. She holds her drink and motions with one hand to describe it, what she would do with so many baskets of bread. Mi prieta, Asturias called her, my dark little one. Neruda used the word negrita, and it is true, her eyes, her hair, both violent, as black as certain mornings have been for the last 14 years. She wears a white cotton dress. Tiny mirrors have been stitched to it. When I look for myself in her, I see the same face over and over. I have the fatty eyelids of a Slavic factory girl, the pale hair of mixed blood. Although Shay has said I have lived my life in the heart of the beast, I have never heard it pounding. When I have seen an animal, I have never reached for a knife. It is like Americans to say, it is only a bear looking for something to eat in the garbage, but we are not unalike. When we look at someone, we are seeing someone else. When we listen, we hear something taking place in the past. When I talk to her, I know what I will be saying 20 years from now. Last summer, she returned to Salvador again. It had been 10 years since Ashes of Izalco was burned in a public place. 10 years without bushes of coffee, since her eyes crossed the finca like black scattering birds. It was simple. She was there to embrace her mother. As she walked through her village, the sight of her opened its windows. It was simple. She had come to flesh out the memory of a poet whose body was never found. Had it changed? It was different. In Salvador, nothing ever is changed. Deya, a cluster of the teeth, the bones of the world, greener than Corsica. In your language, you have no word for it. I can't help you. I am safe here. I have everything I could want. In the morning, I watch the peak of the Tesh knife into the clouds. To my country, I ship poetry instead of bread. So I cut through nothing. I give nothing. So you see, I have nothing according to myself. Deya has 7 different shawls of wind. The sky holds them out to her, helps her into them. I am Shalok, a wind from the southwest, from as far away as my country, and there is nothing to help me in or out of it. Catalina, do you know how long it takes any one voice to reach another?
This is Ravi Shankar reading Spangling the Sea. Spangling the Sea. Ruffle and tuck, river fabric wags doggedly towards ocean, heaping surface on surface, its cadence a gown. Perpetually beneath lurks stillness, a calm inseam sewn by handless needles, distinct from yet part of the sequin design that glints iridescent now than dark as pine. Between silt and waver live many denizens of the deep, zigzagging shiners, freshwater drums, tessellated darters, grass carp, a kaleidoscopic plenitude that yaws and rolls among root wads and bubble curtains drawn on riparian terraces, hinged vertebrae whipping back and forth in elastic continuum, displacing the fluid milieu, enabling them, polarized or not, to scull along in schools. Nothing in outer space so bizarre as episodes underwater. The guild emerged from bouts of massive oviparity staged upon plankton columns, where some fry turn larval while the majority never leave the sure rot of egg sleep. Whether due to snowmelt and mountainous headwater tracks, or to rainfall from cumulonimbus fancy, for whatever reason water appears, from serpentine soil and prairie scrub mosaic, a small muddy trickle that gains momentum as it swells and deepens, sweeping along twigs, carcasses, bald tires, to empty at length into estuaries engulfed by tides, perpetually born of a body dressed in hastening garb, upholstering 2/3 more surface than any ground.
On the day the world ends, a bee circles a clover, a fisherman mends a glimmering net, happy purposes jump in the sea. By the rain spout, young sparrows are playing, and the snake is gold skinned, as it should always be. On the day the world ends, women walk through the fields under their umbrellas, and drunkard grows sleepy at the edge of a lawn. Vegetable peddlers shout in the street, and the yellow-sailed boat comes nearer the island. The voice of a violin lasts in the air and leads into a starry night. And those who expected lightning and thunder are disappointed. And those who expected signs and archangels' trumps do not believe as it is happening now. As long as the sun and the moon are above, as long as the bumblebee visits a rose, as long as rosy infants are born, no one believes it is happening now. Only a white-haired old man who would be a prophet, yet is not a prophet for he's much too busy, repeats while he binds his tomatoes, there will be no other end of the world, there will be no other end of the world.
This is Catherine Hastings. You just heard, again, a number of poets First, Stephen Kimbrough and Dalton Baldwin performed Walt Whitman Cycle 2, O Captain, My Captain, from Kurt Vile's This Is the Life and other recorded songs. The poets that read after that were Mark Strand, Carolyn Forshé, Ravi Shankar, and the late Czeslaw Milosz. This is Catherine Hastings, and you are listening to Word Temple on KRCB 91.1 FM. It's time now to move on to Donald Sidney Fryer. Donald Sidney Fryer, who accompanies himself during his performances on the chitarrone, a bass version of a Renaissance instrument related to the guitar, describes himself as the last of the courtly poets, the one and only Neo-Elizabethan troubadour poet of Northern California. He is the author of The Atlantis Fragments, a book containing three volumes of his Songs and Sonnets Atlantean. The Atlantis Fragments is a synergistic work, with Sidney Fryer's combination of poems and concluding notes, which are both factual and very fictional. The work, which exceeds 500 pages, unfolds as a type of allegory about nature, what he calls an extended ecological metaphor of our planet Earth, a myth of and for our present world. In this myth, Sidney Fryer says, quote, "We as the dominant species equate with both Atlantis and the great cataclysm all rolled into one, given our ever-expanding population, the succeeding destruction or transformation of the planet, and the destruction of at least half of the other species." When the first of the three books appeared in 1971, it was described by one reader as the projection of ancient myth through a series of short lyrics with accompanying notes to explain and extend various points and issues, recondite and otherwise. Take out the concluding notes, and this description equates with what Edmund Spenser achieves with The Faerie Queen in terms of structure, or what fantasy poet Clark Ashton Smith accomplishes in Ebony and Crystal. Spenser and Smith are both poets held in the highest regard by Sidney Fryer. In The Atlantis Fragments, Sidney Fryer worked to create a new triplicate sonnet form based equally upon the Spenserian stanza and the Spenserian sonnet, consisting of three parts, a Spenserian stanza, an intervening tercet, and a final couplet, or in some cases a final quatrain. He says that this was a conscious gesture of poetic style, both in terms of what was appropriate to the subject matter and in terms of old-fashioned aesthetics. Quote, "Thus this apparent restatement of nominally Ashton Smith poetic substance, as combined with Spenserian form and sensibility, does in fact result in something new, something original, all of it in order to give the subject matter a much-needed pristineliness." It's not possible to represent the book well in one short segment, and Donald Sidney Fryer lives in Los Angeles now, but I've asked Sonoma County poet and playwright and fiction writer David Beckman to join me in reading a selection from The Atlantis Fragments. They are fragments in verse and fragments in prose. Most importantly, they are presented as translations, not just from the French, but from the Atlantean. Imagine the first body of poems from Atlantis.
Recompense, translated from the Atlantean of an unknown poet. All that the sea has taken, the sea restores. From Sea Cycle by Clark Ashton Smith. The fabled wealth of the Atlantean kings within the muck and slime of the ocean floor lies far below with lost, forgotten things. And can it be no splendor shall restore the treasures of Atlantis that of yore her subject kings and queens in tribute gave? The sunset and the sunrise evermore with gorgeousness extravagantly brave invoke her stores of gold out from her vast sea grave. And in the twilight after sunset or before the morn, within the great unending robe woven of many a wave, the arch-imperial purple of Atlantis is reborn. And in the night, the white gold stars that vibrate in the sea now hold her wealth of silver and of pale flame gold in fee.
Lullaby, translated from the Atlantean of Prince Atlantarion. Here, where the earth and sea meet evermore, and Mother Night takes all within her keep, the waves wash quietly upon the shore. The wild and white-maned horses of the deep have all been stabled and are now asleep, far down below where sunken triremes lie. Above the shore the seabirds soar and sweep, and through the trees that rise upon the sky, a cool